Welcome to Positively Psychic. Positively Psychic. 2 hours of fascinating interviews and call-ins with your host, the Positively Psychic medium, Mark Christopher Nelson. Positively Psychic. During the show, Mark will invite you to call in to speak with him and his guests. Call in for a free reading and contact your guides, guardian angels, friends, and loved ones on the other side. Positively Psychic. Join the online chat to share thoughts and experiences with like-minded souls at www.para-x.com. Positively Psychic. Listen in now as the Positively Psychic medium, Mark Christopher Nelson, interviews leading experts in the paranormal field, takes your calls, and answers your questions on Positively Psychic.
Hello and welcome to Positively Psychic. I'm your psychic medium host, Mark Christopher Nelson. And my psychic spouse is right with me.
You almost forgot.
Well, you were going for the mic.
Hello, everyone. This is psychic spouse.
Usually Barbara hangs back a little bit, but tonight she was going for the mic. So I just thought I thought I was going to lose it there for a second. Tonight we have a terrific show. I've been so excited about this all week. Barbara and I have recently discovered in our own little world the importance and the incredible stories and the facts and the evidence surrounding crop circles. We've been very fortunate to have Michael Glickman back again to discuss it. Michael is the author of The Bones of God, and he has brought with him Gary King, a crop circle investigator from England. So I wanted to welcome the both of you back to the show. Welcome to the show, Mike. And
hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Gary, I wanted to say welcome to you, and thanks for coming back, Michael.
Hello, Mark. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, guys, I've had a chance to review Michael's book, and it's been making my head spin around. I also wanted to let everybody know that if you wanted to go and see what Michael and Gary have been up to, I would invite you to open up a window and have a look at CropCircleReporter.com. It's a great site, beautifully done. I don't know which you're both. I imagine both of you have worked on it, but it's fascinating. And of course, what it's going to be chronicling are the new appearing crop circles that will show up during this new season that is upon us. So, guys, I wanted to say thank you for being here. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, so we're very fortunate that you've decided to stay awake or get up early, as it might be. So, the site just went up. Is that true?
It's been up
a week or so. We've been developing it for some time, and it started a couple of weeks ago, and now it's taking hours of every day. And Gary is flying regularly. My front room has been turned into a studio, and it's very exciting and rewarding.
Well, I must tell you, again, for everyone listening, CropCircleReporter.com. If you go, there's already... can you tell us what people should expect to see at the site?
Yes, we're posting a series of video blogs, so they're kind of like mini-mentories, we call them. They're sort of a mini-documentary on various issues, but mostly on crop circles that are of particular interest. We've currently got 6 blogs that we've posted now. 2 of them are photograph blogs that are just giving information about the formations as they came down. But we've got 4 video blogs on there now. I've just recently posted 2 in the last 24 hours. One is called Old Sarum, which is the first formation to come down this year. A glimpse at the hidden geometry, and it's a fantastic 16-minute mini documentary where Michael goes through some of the hidden geometry that you don't actually see in the field. You've got to look a little bit deeper, and then you see this amazing stuff springing out. It's a fantastic little mini-mentary we've put together there. We've also the last one I posted was a flight around the crop circle belt. Michael goes out and takes a flight around a kind of favoured hotspot of the crop circles, and we've kind of chronicled that experience of Michael's for the day. That was the last one we put on earlier this evening.
Well, I hope that you gentlemen have access to some aircraft in order to capture some of these as they pop up. I mean, I would think being able to take a tour, an air tour through your area during the season would be a real treat.
It certainly is. Yeah, currently I'm flying every morning. I'm getting up and going out and flying around this crop circle belt every morning, freezing cold in a microlight with the door off. You know, these are the labors of our trade.
Well, what is the most recent one that you've put up?
The most recent blog?
When you say blog, it's your own observations in addition to having video footage, aerial footage, I'm guessing, of the crop circles?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, the first two crop circles have appeared in locations which are actually in a military area. With the Wiltshire Downs and Salisbury Plains, is one of the largest military maneuvering grounds in Europe. And so a lot of the airspace is actually covered by the military. And they dictate when you fly there what your height can be. And when I flew it, I was not allowed to fly below 2,500 feet. So it made videoing it pretty much next to useless. So our aerial shots of the first two formations have been fairly unsuccessful. But the ground footage that we've got, plus the commentary on the sofa with Michael and the slides and the various other issues we've put in there, the illustrative diagrams, they really reveal some of the stuff and get you to see from different perspectives what it's like to experience a formation.
Well, between you and Michael, I'm sure you've seen quite a few. I wanted to jump, if I could, over to Michael's book, Crop Circles, The Bones of God. There are so... I feel like I'm peeling an onion, or I'm falling. It's like I took a walk when I opened up the cover of this book, and I fell into Alice in Wonderland, where I just started falling into this hole, where all of a sudden it's like things that I had no idea existed, and that the evidence. And I'll use a phrase of Michael's. I guess it's you'd have to be stubborn. You'd have to have stubborn and comprehensive desire to avoid the evidence, something like that.
Yes. Well, it is a rabbit hole. It is Alice in Wonderland. And, you know, people say it's an alternative reality. Now, I believe this is reality. And people are not in connection with these miracles are living in an alternative and limited reality. I mean, this is the most exciting and breathtaking experience available on the planet.
Well, one of the things that we talk about reality, one of those realities are the numbers and the geometry associated with these formations. If I could, one of the things that you point out, one of the fascinating pieces of information, and again, it's crop circles of the God, crop circles, the bones of God. You talk about the correlation between Stonehenge, the diameter of the sun, and a large crop circle that appeared not far. I guess it was from Stonehenge, and that that number was 316.8 feet. I guess the diameter of Stonehenge. But then again, if you in terms of measuring the sun. The sun is 316,800 megalithic miles.
So yes.
And then that number is also divisions of 316.8 have been used to describe God as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that I had to, like, put the book down and think for a while. What does that really mean?
Well, you know, we get the sense that we are skating on very thin ice, or to put it another way, the veil between the world and other dimensions is extremely thin. And this question of geometry and number is utterly and completely overwhelming. One example, which is not in the book, but which I hope is going to form part of my presentation this year at our summer conference, is a discovery by a colleague of ours, Robin Heath, that if you place on a map of Great Britain the capital cities of England, Wales, and Scotland, which are London, Cardiff, and Edinburgh, and you draw on the map the triangle linking those three, it forms a perfect Pythagorean triangle of proportions 5, 12, 13. It makes a right angle triangle precise to a question of feet. Mm-hmm. Now, how does this happen? Who organized this?
That's an excellent question, Michael.
Yes.
I mean, in truth, I'd be curious. I was afraid you were going to tell me that those that the square mileage or whatever it would be a division of 316.8. But
I tell you something. I bet it is at some level.
Oh yes.
I'm sure the density of this information. Another man who recently died, who we were close to, was the great and venerable John Michel, who passed away last year. And he was the discoverer of many of these numerical and geometric, I suppose we'd call them coincidences, but I think miracles and astonishments is a much better idea. You know, I mean, his understanding of the ratio of number to things like the diameter of Earth, the diameter of the Moon, and how they work together to form very specific spatial geometries is a subject which turns my mind to scrambled egg.
I am with you, Michael. Well, you know, your book is like a salad of questions that turn your brain into scrambled eggs. Pardon my mixed metaphor there, but it's there's just one thing after another. For example, how could the people who created Stonehenge, without any help, come up with the 316.8 measurement that also happens to be the diameter of the sun?
Yeah. Well, I have no comment other than to repeat what you say. How could they do it? How could this be? How did they know?
In your book, too, you also, I'm going to probably be saying that a lot tonight, so you also point out that how did the pyramid builders know about the size of the Earth? Because the pyramid is a division of, there's a mathematical correlation to the size of the Earth in the pyramids. Isn't that the case?
Yes. The dimension of one side of the square base of the pyramid is a very specific proportion of the diameter of the Earth.
I think that if an alien was involved, or someone who could fly an aircraft in the time of the Egyptians, or a spacecraft, that it would seem like you would need some kind of assistance in that way. Or to have a grasp of mathematics that is beyond certainly what we would consider them to be capable of at the time.
Well, this information that we mention hints at a cosmic intelligence millennia old, mm-hmm, that has been available elsewhere and is accepted elsewhere as a given. And it appears to me that our ancestors had the privilege of being given a small part of this. And we've forgotten how we got it or where we got it, but it is there in some of these, what we call now, miracles, astonishments, or unbelievable things which the world simply turns away from. That which we don't understand, that which we can't measure, does not exist. No. We do not allow it to exist.
Gary King, our yeah. Gary, he had an experience on the 7th, on July 7th, 07, in Eastfield, the Eastfield event, as it's called, and it speaks very much to what you're talking about, Michael. Gary, can you tell us a little bit about that experience and give us a little bit of the backdrop as to where it was and all of that?
Sure, sure. Well, I've been following the crop circles for about 10 years up at that point. And it was I regularly stay down in Wiltshire in the summertime. I was living in South Wales at the time. And that summer was no exception. I had my caravan down here. It was midsummer. And on the 6th of the of July, I decided that I was going to do a night watch because the next day, going into the after midnight, obviously was going to be the 777, the lucky seven. So, Picknap Hill, which is a very famous hill overlooking Eastfield, a very famous hotspot for crop circles. And my girlfriend and I walked up there about 1 a.m. in the morning, and coincidentally met up with a guy that I'd met in the day earlier in the day at the crop circle cafe. He was interested in looking for UFOs or flying balls of light, capturing different phenomena on cameras. He had all these cameras set up in a vehicle which were running to independent video recorders. And he had an array of cameras on top of the hill as well, all with some of them with night vision capability. So we sat down and chatted with him and passed away the hours having interesting conversations. About 3 a.m., there was an almighty white flash of light which completely encompassed the landscape and the sky. It was still completely pitch black. The whole field had been in darkness all night. We'd seen a few cars go by in the road and the lights way off in the distance you could see. But apart from that, it was very, very dark. So about 20 minutes after, some light began to creep in, very minimal, and we felt that we could see a shadow or something on the field. So he switched his night vision cameras on, and there through the lens of the camera, we could see what turned out to be the second biggest crop circles we've ever appeared. It was consisted of 190 crop circles, over 1,033 feet long, 500 feet wide. It was depicting, a lot of people considered it to depict the Om symbol, the sacred symbol of creation. So we waited for the light and continued filming. The whole night was on videotape from 11 o'clock, recorded, and nobody went in that field. It was dark all night, no torches. Very light sensitive cameras that went down to 1/200th of a lux, so any light source was picked up. And so my girlfriend and I got the privilege to walk in that crop circle about 4:30 in the morning, just as dawn was coming up. And all of that you can see in a documentary that was made just shortly after on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and type in Eastfield 070707, you can see that and see the footage that was taken at the time, the light flash that interrupted the cameras and all the rest of it.
It's astonishing. It's astonishing.
Mm, yeah, it was a powerful experience.
Well, you know, if you, let's say you're a culture, you're visiting what you might, well, let's say is a less developed culture, mm-hmm. and you don't want to scare them, but yet you want to get the attention of people with the mental capacity or openness to perhaps open a dialogue not based in fear.
Yeah.
This certainly fits that as a methodology of reaching those people.
It does, but with some very, very strong characteristics. You know, since the phenomenon has began, like many other strange phenomenon, they're always surrounded with skepticism. And with regards to this, there's been incidents where the proof has come tantalizingly close, and it seems that every year and every season people get that kind of fervor and wish that, you know, this year is going to be the one when, you know, everyone's going to see that this is really real and so on. And on that occasion, they did just they just came closer, but not right out. And there's something in that, because everybody questions who the authors are. But if you ignore that for a while and start thinking about what it is they're saying and how it is they're approaching us, as you just pointed out, then there's something much richer in that. It seems to me that whoever it is has great compassion and great wisdom, and they've been through what we're going through now as a civilization, just like parents, the children, and they have an immense amount of compassion for us with the struggles that we're having within consciousness and as a collective, and they're offering us help, and they don't want to fright us. And there's so much fear in the world that they're having to tread ever so carefully over a long campaign of 30 years now to just touch us gently. And, you know, some of us have been blessed and privileged, I consider myself one of those deeply, to have been touched by that and you know, then to do something with it, to try and raise the stakes, rise above it, just as we have to in an aircraft to take a picture of it. We have to rise above this situation to try and put a different perspective on it and see that we're all the same. You know, it's about humanity. The message is about us. It's not about who it is. Focus on the subject matter, and that's about us, where we all are.
I had a question. I was wondering, as we're approaching 2012, is it? Do you see an increase in the amount of crop circles?
Well, it's not necessarily about the amount so much. I mean, we had about 88 last year, around the same like the year before. They've been pretty consistent on those sorts of figures, and that's a lot of crop circles. It's hard to just visit around them, but the quality and the development of three themes which have been so creatively expressed in the circles and developed over years when you monitor them, that's something that's been building to a crescendo towards 2012, definitely.
Michael, in his book, talks about the progression of number themes, and I guess I guess 1, 2, 3, 4 were, I guess, most at the time of the printing of the book, I think we were at number 7, and it's a numeric theme that seems to...
It was never a sequence as simple as that. It never went 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
I mean, we for us in our culture, numbers are useful for pricing gasoline in our vehicles and working out our taxes. But we have forgotten the amazing symbolic and emotional meaning. Every single number, classically, has a very profound meaning in according to ancient experience and wisdom. And the sequence of number development went 4, 7, 11, 13.
Okay.
Now, each of these had a very specific meaning, and they each arrived in a specific year, and had a bearing on that year and the subsequent years. Number 7, for example, is a number of great meaning and relates to revelation and spirit and what lies behind the veil. And this arrived in 98 for the first time ever and had been predicted to arrive and is now a recurring and essential feature in the numerology of the formations which we get. And I think it's very poetic that the number of spirit and revelation is so massively referred to in the crop circle story.
Well, there's so many numbers that popped up in the book that I hope I didn't cut you off there, but the idea that they would communicate, and again, I believe it is a they or a group consciousness. I don't know, and I don't think it matters that much, but the message, I guess, to Gary, as you were saying, was that they communicated pi, the symbol
yes.
pi, and
yeah.
And the squaring of the circle. One of the in the book, the Barbary Castle and the dimensional
yes.
shift. That chapter alone is worth the price of admission, I have to tell you guys. I mean, it just...
I think you're absolutely wrong. That chapter alone is worth several million.
I'm glad you took advantage of my straight line.
It's a special crop circle.
Oh, it is. And for those, I mean, if I could, well, why don't you guys try to describe it since we are on the radio? I wish I could just hold it up to the camera and let everybody have a look.
Well, okay. You go, Gary.
You want me to go?
Well, what do you think?
Okay, well, I'll have a stab and then you pick up my town.
Right.
Okay, the Barbary Castle part. It's such a special story for Michael, and I feel so privileged to have been part of that with Michael. When I was privileged to read a copy of Michael's book, The Bones of God, when it first came off the press, we were sitting in a restaurant. We finished up sitting in a restaurant having lunch as I got to the last chapter, and we giggled like children at how blessed we felt to have had the privilege of the experience that surrounded that function. It's the decoding of that formation, the ratchet, to it's for me the meaning of pi is this infinity. It's this relationship of the finite, which is symbolized by four, as Michael mentioned earlier. The number four is important. Like material reality, it's symbolized by a finiteness. And there is a relationship to the infinite that we consider, which is symbolized by the circle, which is this squaring of the circle. And pi kind of encapsulates, when you look at a circle, you have the diameter. If you call that diameter 1, then the outside will be 3.14 and so on and so on and so on. And that formation depicted the first 10 digits of pi, then three dots, like an ellipsis in the English language, where you put three dots to say, and so on and so on and so on. And so it was like a maze that you walked throughout towards the outside circumference of the circle, and you had a relationship yourself with something that was infinite. And Mark should tell you then about how... the crop circle, I think.
Well, just to help, just jump in for a second. It looks like a lot of gears piled up. For those who might, it's like it's a circle that builds, but it has these beautiful little ridges that call to mind a gear on a 10-speed bike or something like that. And of course, that's the most crude way to describe it. And I'll let you, Michael, continue. But it is helpful.
First of all, it was. A formation of enormous precision and beauty. And this is something which has to be reiterated and all the time, that whatever the richness of the implicit meaning in the formations, they are always physically astonishingly beautiful. I believe that the civilization, the intelligence, the group, I don't know what to call it, that is responsible for these events is so phenomenally evolved beyond our comprehension that they've reached a point of evolution and civilization and compassion within which ugliness is simply not possible. And so the idea of them doing a crop circle, which A, was meaningless, and B, was not beautiful, is simply not possible for them. Mm-hmm. We have reached a point in our civilization where if we went up to somebody and said, oh, I want you to do me a favor, go up to that building and bang your head against the corner of the concrete until your forehead bleeds. We couldn't do that. We have reached a point in evolution where we understand about pain and not doing stupid things to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's a useful thing to learn. But I imagine that after centuries, indeed millennia, the spirit of living beings elevates beyond this. And it is my belief, indeed my certainty, that the crop circle authors have reached a point at which an ugly thought is simply unavailable to them. They've lived in the civilization of such compassion, evolution, spirituality, that it is taken for granted that they produce beauty. Now, therefore, what we are getting is not handwritten messages pushed under the door saying, switch the oven off. What we are getting is communications of enormous subtlety and impact and beauty and meaning. And below all this, at the bottom line, the formations are spectacularly lovely. And Barbary Castle was spectacularly lovely. It was a jagged spiral. It was a ratchet spiral, a stepped spiral, which did not unwind from the center evenly, like a clock spring, for example. It moved through an arc, then jumped outwards, then moved through another arc, jumped outwards, and so on. So it was rather than being a continuous expanding spiral, it was a jagged spiral. And there was so much meaning implicit in there. I stared at the photograph for days. And I have to say, my career in the crop circle is based on an ability to stare at things until I cannot understand what I just don't know what's going on. I will simply live with an image until I start to understand it. And one particular Saturday morning, and I guess this was 3 or 4 days after the formation of the Rhine, I had a photograph in my living room, and I had a friend staying with me, and we were sitting down, and I stared at it. The phone rang, and it was a colleague of ours, Karen Douglas, who also, in her part of the world, was staring at the same photograph, and as damned as we were with the enigmatic beauty of this thing. And she said, she referred to a single dot towards the center of the spiral and 3 dots towards the end of the spiral. And she said to me, maybe that first dot is a decimal point. And maybe the sequence of three dots at the end is an ellipsis. And when she said that, I realized that the uncoiling arcs of the spiral were encoding a number which had first a decimal point in it, and at the end an ellipsis, dot, 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 which means an irrational or infinite number which goes on forever and never reaches a conclusion. And suddenly I started to understand the relationship of the geometries of the formation, which very, very simply were encoding the numbers to build pi, but to build pi with an absolute, unquestionable, specific accuracy. This formation laid the code for pi, which is, as you understand, the precise constant between the square and the circle. And it was laid down in a gigantic formation in beautiful Bali. Now, this for me was one of the most beautiful revelations of my life. What is the nature of a civilization which so elegantly and lovingly gives us clues about the universe? It was bewildering.
It is, I mean, photograph after photograph, they are beautiful. There's nothing random about them. There is great precision from the smallest details. I think that having the ratcheted edges, which of course were done with astonishing precision, considering the scale and the fact that you're working with a field of barley, it just goes out in a, it looks like a perfect, succinct, clear message. You know, and I have to say, another thing that stopped me in your book and gave me something to chew on for some time was the idea of, you brought in Star Trek. And for all of us who grew up with Star Trek know the TV show, the missions that they went out on were always based on a prime directive. Michael, can you tell us a little bit about that and how that applies to the circles?
Well, the prime directive fundamentally was for the star crews, they were forbidden for interfering in the affairs of a less evolved civilization, because in so doing, they would ruin the less evolved civilization. Now, if our period on planet Earth has shown us anything, it is that when we make contact with a less evolved civilization, we completely screw it up. And we have seen this as an inevitable rule, as inevitable as holding the stone and opening your hand. What will happen? It will drop to the floor. And very simply, when we have contacted civilizations which we call native or primitive or undeveloped, we don't bring them development or civilization. We bring them disease and ruination. Now, it was very clear that the idea, the prime directive, which was a brilliant notion by the writer of the series, is in fact reality. because the sentient civilizations out there who are now knocking on our door do so with centuries, millennia of wisdom behind them, and they have learned what we never learned, and that is that we should respect their evolved civilizations. And indeed, it's my view that these civilizations have been fully aware of planet Earth for many, many centuries, and have been prevented by their version of the Prime Directive from coming in to help. They have an overwhelming moral and ethical code which says we do not interfere. And I imagine, I have this cosmic vision of two parties. On the one hand, one of them will say, they're ruining the planet. They're killing themselves. All this war and destruction and pollution, we have to help them. And the other said, yeah, you're right. They're committing planetary suicide. They're committing genetic suicide. They're destroying species hand over fist, but we cannot move in. We cannot move in. And the other side says, for God's sake, what are we going to do? Are we going to watch this beautiful blue planet decimate its populations and its creatures and its oceans and its air? Are we simply going to stand by and watch? And the other side says, what are we going to do? And then they reach a compromise, which is, let us not walk in with our metallic craft and land on the White House lawn and say, oh, we can solve your problem of disease and energy and pollution. Let us instead scatter crop circles like playthings on the nursery carpet and simply intrigue them.
And yes,
this is, I think, what they've done.
Michael,
as a compromise.
Michael, I have a question for you from our chat room, and I'll try and ask it the way our friend Cece out there. It's kind of a complicated question, but I'll try and do the best I can. She was asking, when you were talking about when you look at the design, that you think about it a lot and you can't get it out of your mind. And when you were looking at the design to understand it, to understand the geometry, was that an intuitive process?
Well, this is entering on a very difficult area, because there's no doubt in my mind, and I'm sure Gary would confirm this, that these beings, this civilization, the authors, are interactive with us and telepathic with us. And every single researcher, every single person who spends time with the crop circles, with good intent, has personal stories of astonishments and impossibilities, which can only be called telepathic. We all have the sense that we are being, in the kindest and most benign of ways, monitored. They know what our intentions are, they know what our activities are, and everybody who's around here who's working on this has a real sense that there is a very subtle interaction going on. Now, this summer will be my 21st season, and I was an architect by education, and I taught design extensively, both in England and in the United States. And this is an area of my expertise. And so it's very difficult for me to draw a precise line between that which I know and that which I have brought to the party, and that which has arrived because of nudges, encouragements, hints, clues, which are given to me. And, you know, I've been through certain involvements with certain formations at certain times where it seemed to unfold for me like a delightful but fundamentally easy and logical puzzle. And I worked that way. But there have been other periods. There was particularly a notable period in the year 2000 where very, very specifically I was under instruction. I went through a period of weeks, indeed months, where I would wake up at 4 o'clock every morning with a jolt, not because some weird Californian married couple was phoning me to appear on an interview program, but I was woken with a jolt, and when I woke up, I understood specifically what my task was. And I went next door, I got up, put on a robe and went next door into my office where I knew specifically that I had to measure a distance on a map or check the geometry of a particular formation or put A together with B. This was a period which went on for some weeks, and was enormously fruitful. I mean, the results of that produced a lecture and a video for me, and eventually I physically collapsed wow. After, I suppose, 2 or 3 months, I physically crashed. And I said, I had a conversation and a prayer, a meditation. And I said, look, thank you, but this is enough for the minute. I can't take it. Please leave me alone for a few weeks. And they did. I had a period of calm. But the result of that was several, for me, momentous insights about the crop circles. It was based very much on the crop circle season of 2000, and I made several discoveries which were given to me. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
Michael, I have to tell you, I've been waiting the information we receive, it comes from two places, from things that we know and we learn about, and inspiration. And you're a very learned man. You've you're an educator, and you've great expertise in your field. However, the things that you're talking about are things that other people in your field with similar education may have no interest in. And I think that it's because you're open to being inspired in a way that perhaps they're not. And so I would tend to think that you're into there's the analytical mind that you bring to this, But there must be a very intuitive side of you that you bring to this as well.
Well, I think this is the case for all crop circle researchers, that in a sense, and this sounds arrogant, and I'm always very careful and scared when I put this forward, but I believe we all feel that, like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters, we were fingered. They scanned us and said, he will do. Yeah. He was an architect. He brings certain skills. And every individual here who's working on this has a sense that they were, and you know, it's very difficult to say this without a certain kind of arrogance and hubris, and I'm very delicate about this, I'm very concerned about it, but I think we all feel that we have been not selected, but approved for use. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Gary, do you think you've been approved for use?
Yeah. Continually still feel like you're kind of an apprentice under the glare of the masters. That's kind of how I relate to it, is this issue of teachers and how we relate to teachers and how, as artists, I had an experience in my martial arts kind of career, let's call it, where the style I'm practicing now, I've been practicing with a Chinese teacher for the last 10 years, and it's a whole system where you have to undo lots of preconditioned stuff and come at things from a different way. I got very frustrated and couldn't understand it and was fighting with different things. And it went on for a while, and my teacher one day said to me, "You're at a point where you're crawling now, and you're standing up and you're making a few steps and wobbling and going and falling over. And at those points when you've got to fall over, I can help you and make you stand up. Really, you need to stand up for yourself." And that's grasping, really, then being an artist and being able to be intuitive, but having the foundation of what you've got. What you're struggling with right now is you're scared to just run with what you've got. And this is what the crop circles have done for me the most over the last 13 years. They've been these invisible teachers that have gradually got me to look and gradually brought me around in different coincidental circumstances to get me to see, you know, these things about myself, my own process and the creative process and how these things can come to us. Musicians and artists experience so many different varieties of ways that they get the creative inspiration. I've heard of a poet who said that poems used to chase her across the landscape, and she used to have to run to get a pencil and pad and write them down. It's crazy. And she's one of the most celebrated poets. These invisible forces are amazing. And I think they want to teach us and they want to show us about what we can tap into and our own potential.
Well, I have another question from the chat room that kind of relates to this and what Michael was talking about.
Before you go on,
oh,
does this answer the first question for Cece?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
And the second thing is Cece from California, and was she on my mailing list when I was in California?
I don't think Cece is in California. I think she's in Northern California. But,
because there are many people called Cece, that's all. And I remember we used to have someone called Cece on the... Anyway, look, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no.
The next question.
I'll have to ask her. We had another question, and it was relating to what you were talking about being chosen. It says, do you feel that these beings actually monitor the reaction to the circles? And do people who live around these circles notice a difference in themselves afterwards?
Yes and no. Specifically, yes, that they monitor the people around them. Yes, but they monitor the people who are excited by them, in tune with them, and working on them. And no, the people who simply live around here seem to be spectacularly unmoved by these events.
Astonishingly.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's breathtaking. I mean, it's softening up and clearing up. It's taking years and years and years.
Yeah.
The lady who works, there are several people who work around town, the local town here, in activities, and one or two of them will come forward and express with some nervousness a real interest in the crop circles. And of course, when we find one of these civilians who shows some excitement, we get very, very thrilled, and we give them books and stuff, you know. But that's very rare. And by and large, it is simply for the locals a kind of slightly strange feature of this limited landscape. And they're nervous because here suddenly in their fields is a miracle.
Well, doesn't that saying go, you're never a prophet in your own hometown?
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's like that.
I think there's a very large level of, I won't say fear, but nervousness at this confrontation with the unknown. And it's hardwired into humanity. We do not want today to be too much different from yesterday. Thank you very much. Keep your crop circles.
Well, you know, it isn't the crop circle. They're beautiful, they're magnificent. But if you, it's the third question after you consider the fact that they may be something other than man-made. Okay. You know, it's like, okay, that's a circle that's not man-made. Or I have no idea how that would be made. Okay. So where does that take me? Well, maybe something other than man made it. Uh-oh. Okay, then where does that take me? Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Well, then that means that someone very, very big and powerful is playing in our backyard, and we have no control and no knowledge about what they're going to do next and what they mean by this and where they, you know, where we expect them to go. That brings me up to, Michael, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, and then I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on this, but the last word in your book is prelude. And that to me, I thought was very important. So you discussed what do these things mean? What is their purpose? We're doing that tonight, but in fact, what if they are really a grand extended prelude? A prelude to what?
I think we're right on the edge of a massive evolutionary step in consciousness. People have been talking about 2012 for many years, and they've been talking about a shift for many years, and they say it's a shift in consciousness, a shift in density, a shift in vibration, a shift in dimension. I don't know what any of these things mean, but there's certainly going to be a shift, and indeed there certainly is a shift. We are in the shift. We've been in the shift for, I guess, 20 years. It's been the world has been shifting around us, and part of that shift is the cataclysmic events which we're seeing now, week by week, which is
very similar, I think, to a snake shedding its skin. We are, as a planet, as a civilization, as individuals, shrugging off our old skins. We are wriggling to shake off the old world like old clothes which don't fit us very well. Mm-hmm. It's very clear to us that our existing routines and relationships and politics and economics are irksome and not enormously helpful. And I think our consciousness is shifting to encompass and embody an evolved civilization. I mean, this is a fantasy, and I can only speculate. I have no evidence for this. It's a speculation, a hypothesis, but I believe we are on the route, inevitably, without choice now, we are going to see massive changes.
Well, in your book, you talk about 8 signs, but I also want to talk, since you did bring up 2012, the crop...
Yes, dimensional shift.
You mentioned the crop circle, or actually a crop circle on Avebury Manor.
Avebury Manor, yes.
Yes, and it's a depiction of where the planets will be on December 21st, 2012, which marks the end of the Mayan long count calendar.
Yes.
In seeing that, did it make you feel good, bad, confused? What did you...
Me?
Yes.
Terrific. What do you mean? I've now been swimming in these waters for so long that I'm very comfortable here. I'm very comfortable with the certainty that things are going to shift. And I'm also very comfortable with the realization that I should be sitting nervous and fearful attending to my motor car and my mortgage and my career and not thinking these millennial thoughts. But the truth is, I'm delighted that there are going to be changes. I mean, one of the things that is, you know, you mentioned that and I remember the phrase a few minutes ago, you said that these intelligences were big and powerful. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the first thought, bigness and power. But I sense, and I guess Gary would agree with me here, that they are big and powerful. They're hugely big and unimaginably powerful, but the level at which we are approached is entirely benign and loving. I think that we, you know, they are knocking on our door, and what they're doing is pushing love letters underneath. Mm-hmm. And we can't bear this. We cannot bear the fact that they do not wish to sell anything.
Well, picking up on what Michael said, though, about our experiences, the thing is, when you feel that you're being monitored and that you can be woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning and given inspiration to write or make connections about certain issues to do with the crop circles or whatever in your life, and it feels that there's this invisible unknown force that's big and powerful that can move you around in coincidental circumstances and do any number of things with you, is not readily accepted by people who have been pretty much inculcated in cultures to keep more and more private and be ever more distrustful of other people and what their real business is. And so peeling off these layers and accepting that all of the issues of secrets and deception, one of the messages of the crop circles has been about deception. It's been repeated a few times. And they oppose it. And deception kind of keeps people apart from each other, and there's deceptions all around and things that will lead people one way or another. And to know that something can just monitor you, to know that something can just guide you around, is very frightening for a lot of people, and they don't want to know it. They won't want to know that.
You know, two things. Barbara brought up a very good idea. She was saying, you know, it's like, what if these beings, and I'm not going to say human beings, I'll just say beings, these the authors of the circles look something like us?
They're
because
among us.
What if they are, Barbara's saying, what if they were among us? What if they want to, you know, maybe they're this, and I understand I'm being, I feel like when I bring this up, I'm being a little slope-headed, a little bit dense, but I think it's, you know, what if they, in order to appeal to us or to not frighten us, they look like someone that your mom would hang out with, you know, what if they, you know, and I guess I'm, maybe it's even a metaphor, but I mean, they're certainly not going to frighten us. That's, you know, they could have done that a long time ago. And
there was an episode of Star Trek. You're talking about Star Trek and Prime Directive. There was an episode called First Contact, where a civilization was about to initiate warp drive, which would give them the capability of knowing that there are other beings that are living around in the universe. And at that point, they were being monitored very seriously in their development of that capability. And just prior to them launching the first rocket that would do this, there were agents from the starship that were down on the planet, posing as different civilians or members of the government and so on and so forth, wearing the appropriate uniforms, that were monitoring the situation, how people's reactions were, whether fear was getting out of hand, and so on and so forth. And there was a whole episode that was dedicated to the delicate diplomacy and the way that they couldn't breach the Prime Directive that was having to be played. And there were people that were fearful in the security that were very similar to what our Homeland Security would be like, or members of our security services that would think the worst, that they were trying to overtake us and so on and so on. It was very interesting. We seem to be playing similar games here.
Well, it seems like, you know, we're on the edge of something, like with the accelerator in CERN, Switzerland. That's, to me, it's very interesting, but it's very scary at the same time, because they're trying to take atoms and shoot them the speed of light or whatever, and try and create a black hole. And, you know, it's almost like they're trying to figure out how to time travel or travel through different dimensions. And I'm wondering if that isn't like increasing an interest in what we're doing, or, you know.
Quite possibly. It seems like when I was growing up, there was always one or two kids on the block that wanted to light fires, and they seemed to have an unhealthy obsession with playing with boxes and matches, you know. And you get these rich guys and they're just playing with bigger boxes and matches, really. And I suppose that draws bigger attention from bigger parents. That could definitely be an issue, yeah.
Well, that's what scares me, is I wonder if they really know what they're dealing with.
Well,
I don't know.
I think there's too much vanity, personally.
One of the things that, Michael, I think it was you were saying, the idea that they're not going to try to frighten us, or both of you guys are making that case, they being the authors, I guess is a safe way to describe them. When I work as a psychic medium, I also help people. I talk about guides, and to me, they appear as in a very. They look very human. They are. They look. They appear completely human. In fact, the guides that I work with three guides that appear to me in a way that I can appreciate and not be fearful of them. One of them has the name of my brother. Another is like looks like someone that I've seen before that is very familiar. They try to come to me to provide guidance in the guise in the appearance of being very comfortable, very non-threatening, and it's all about feeling secure, safe, pleasant. Certainly, if receiving communications in a field of beautiful crops and a beautiful, tranquil countryside is safe, it's comfortable. It seems, you know, and I just feel like that there's a connection there, that there's a higher consciousness, beings vibrating or operating or at a higher level, in a different dimension, whatever it might be, and they're trying to appeal to us and not only, you know, interest us, but do it in the safest possible manner. They're not, you know, writing things in the sky with flames. They're leaving beautiful, you know, interesting diagrams in gorgeous fields.
So clever.
I believe you're right. Mm. Yes.
Where would you feel safer, quite honestly, than in a beautiful open pasture? It's they're doing this because they want us to be at ease. They want us to feel comfortable. They want us to be in a state of mind of openness. And you know, I tell you, running through a field or walking or however you get through a field, it brings a little bit of childlike interest. It's like you want to see it. You smell things that you don't smell all the time. You wake up. You feel nature. You're immersed in nature or a form of nature. Even if
you know, one of the things, Mark, one of the things I've done over the last 3 years is acted as a tour guide to people for crop circles. I've taken many people from all over the world into crop circles for their first experiences. And using the words of somebody else, actually, Dr. John Sherwood, he says that one of the things you see when people experience the inside of a crop circle for the first time is that they immediately get in touch with the inside of themselves in a way that they haven't for a very long time. The whole environment, the landscape, the smells, as you said, the birds singing, the wind in the crop. Then when you walk down the tram line and the space opens up to you and you're walking around in this internal space that's laid straight lines or curved lines, or it does different things to how you're feeling and experiencing. And you used a very important word when you said childlike. Viewing the world with childlike innocence, in awe and wonder at the magic of reality, like the magic of a crop circle, for me now, is the magic of the bird that's above it singing is equal it to me. The magic is everywhere. And when you can start to see that magic again, just like a child, magical things start to happen more and more and more. And people that I've taken on tour guides to them, I've seen them experience an opening, an opening, an opening. And they've had emotional releases. Some of them dance around in joy. Some of them get contemplative and then they open. And they talk to me and tell me stories afterwards of the process that they've been through. I've seen it so many times. It's a wonderful experience.
I mean, they're going through a transformation in a sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. The crop circles facilitate that, but they do it in a way that is, as you said, a way that they can handle. You think about it. Geometry is a set of numbers. You know, a triangle is the number 3 made visible. Mm-hmm. A square is 4, and so on. So when you see a mandala that contains different shapes, but it looks harmonious, it relates, each one relates to itself. It's like a piece of music to the eyes. It is, in fact, a piece of music to the eyes. We're wired to see and hear in the same proportional ratios that make musical harmony. Mm-hmm. And so when you as a medium receive messages from guides and they present themselves to you in a way that you are comfortable and that you feel okay with. The crop circles are doing exactly the same thing in the gentlest of ways, in ways that are really attempting, they're going out of their way to make us feel comfortable. They leave doorways open for us to walk through, and openings for us to experience in different ways. It's so thoughtful of us. It's amazing.
I completely agree. I mean, it's what's possible on the other side, other dimensions. I mean, I guess we'll one day all find out, but I'm not there yet. I'm certainly postulating and wondering. In Michael, in the book, you bring up 8 examples of this
changing
transformation.
Yes, eventual shift.
Yes. Can you talk?
Yes.
I have the book open. I don't know if you have your book. Maybe you have it committed to memory. Maybe, Gary, you know it as well. But
I've certainly not got my book. If I tell you the truth, Mark, I'm in bed.
I'm so glad you're comfortable, Michael. I mean,
I imagine Gary's in bed too, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm downstairs.
Oh, I see. Well,
I've been uploading the latest blog, Michael, to the video to the website. It's done.
It's done.
It's done. Yeah.
Good.
You got to get up now. I'm going to have a look.
Well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go back.
I need you joking.
Oh, yeah.
I can paraphrase. I mean, I'll tell you a little bit about. I mean, you talk about the fact that time seems to speed up.
Number one, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number one.
And that, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that, but it's...
Well, this is a commonplace now. Everybody has the sense that time is speeding up. You will be hard-pressed to find a human being who will say, oh, time is slowing down.
Yes.
Everybody says it's speeding up. And then you say, oh... That is interesting. Why do you think that is? They say, oh, well, I suppose it's because we're getting older and this is what happens. But I don't recall my father 30 or 40 years ago saying, oh, time seems to be speeding up.
No, he didn't. Well, our technology is making everything seem so quick. I want to talk to a couple of very fascinating guys in England. I can go to my computer, bing, and I can both of them at once.
Yes.
As opposed to sending a long letter where the conversation that we've had tonight might have taken months or years of correspondence back and forth. And we've covered a lot.
Well, I mean, in that respect, time is being sped up technologically. But I think... The experience of the individual has shifted very subtly, so that our relationship with time is substantially different to what it was 20 years ago. Mm. And the average person will assume, oh, wow, that's the way the world is becoming, but I think it is more subtle and more profound than that. I think it is the first characteristic of dimensional shift.
I agree. I want to touch on these other ones too, because I do see so many. I mean, this is meaningful, the experience of many small impossibilities. Aren't these each one of these formations a small possibility?
Yes. I think what I found out, and I mean, I have to say, this list of 8 characteristics of dimensional shift was developed by me when I was living in California.
Huh.
And this thing about small impossibilities was something I was very intrigued by and was happening widely among my acquaintances in California and happening much more regularly to women, curiously. And It is those events which are completely strange, and you know absolutely that they're strange and impossible, but they're so small that they don't completely freak you out.
Well,
so
yeah,
there is a little box, and you remember putting it in a specific drawer, and you know as certainly as you know the sun is in the sky that you put it in that drawer. And then one morning you wake up and it's on the bookshelf. Now, there are very, very few people who haven't had this kind of strangeness occur to them. And, I mean, I collected lists of these things, which are totally beyond reason. I mean, I'll give you two because they're great.
Okay.
Number one, there was a woman who had a day off work for the first time in many months, and she thought, great, I'm in California, I'm going out into the yard, I'm going to stretch out and get some sun. And the next door dog barked all the time, a tiny little irritating pooch. And this woman knew that her neighbors had this dog, but she was never at home. So she didn't know that the dog was left alone at home and was put into their backyard for hours while these two were at their offices, and was so frustrated, he just barked through the day. And she was driven crazy by this barking. And she said, oh, God, I just can't stand it. And suddenly the barking stopped. And she looked up, and the dog was on the roof.
On the roof?
Yes. Now, this is all I know about this story. The woman in question told me.
Well,
and I believed her absolutely. Story number one. Here is story number two. A woman was asked to look after a cat. The cat had not been very well and needed to be given one pill every day. And the owner of the cat said, look, what is very important, if you try and give the cat the pill, it won't eat it. So what I do is I put the pill on the plate, and then I get the can of cat food and empty it over the pill. And I notice when the food is eaten, the pill is gone. So clearly, it's been disguised. So, the first morning, the woman opened the tin, plonks it on the plate, and she thinks, oh, God, I forgot to put the pill on the plate before the food. And she sat there with her hand on the tin before she pulled it up. And she thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. And she pulled the tin up, and the pill was sitting on the meat inside the tin.
That now, will make again, you doubt your sanity a little bit.
Yeah. Yes. Again, I interviewed this woman. I know this was reality. Yet, in both of these cases, these two absolutely weird and inexplicable events were small enough to be digested. And it was really, it wasn't a full frontal assault on Newtonian and Cartesian mechanical reality. It was a small tap on the shoulder saying, oh, the rules of the material world are shifting.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well,
and I think we are all individually increasingly experiencing these tiny hints of impossibilities.
Well, Barbara may be right when she says there are aliens among us. I mean, in a way, I don't mean like they're dressed up in fake, you know, but they may be among us in a different dimension. They may be among us in that they look exactly like us. That who knows? One thing I can tell you, as a psychic medium, I do deal with a lot of small things that I have absolutely no explanation for. I'll give you a quick one. I was watching a TV show last night on an investigation of there's a local TV show here where I did an investigation of a home where some pretty awful murders took place by Charles Manson. You may have heard of Charles Manson.
I think we've heard of Charles Manson.
Yes. Well, I did an investigation at that house. And then I'm sitting there, and I wasn't on TV for this. I mean, I knew people on it, but I just for the heck of it, I brought out this little machine called, or a little device called an ovulus. And what it does is it randomly speaks out words. The idea is that spirit or energy, however you want to describe it, universal energy will influence the words to come out so that they are relevant. So I'm sitting there watching the show, and it starts to say, Charles, murder, tragic. And it's like, all right, that's too coincidental. And this was just last night. I mean, I was there. I don't know if it's a connection to me, if it's just randomly picking up on what's on the TV. But this device that is not a recorder, it just picked up on those words. It said, Charles, murder, tragic. And I just, it knocked my, because it'll say things like xylophone, monkey, you know, happy, case. And then it starts going into murder, Charles, tragic. And it's like, ah! And it's like, that really got my attention. And there is no good rational explanation for that, except that there's a lot that we don't know.
Oh, boy. Is there a lot we don't know?
That'll be the topic of another 100 shows. We don't have time to cover that exactly. So
what we do know, though, is that coincidence is something that more and more people are experiencing in this approach to 2012. And coincidence, funny enough, is something that science dismisses, but something that is very real in our lives. And it seems to be one of these magical keys to life itself. You know, how does it all work? It seems to be a magical coincidence, and we seem wrapped up in that. And I think that's part of it too.
Mm-hmm. It was just a strange little thing that happened, but some of the other
amazing.
Yeah, it was mind blowing for me. I'm getting used to mind blowing stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. Talking to you guys, talking to clients, and. You talk about some of the other, I'll go through them a little bit quickly if Michael wants to jump in, but you talk about premonitions and intuitions.
Yes.
Healings or healings.
Yes.
The snapping back of karma.
Oh, yes, that's a favorite, yes.
Tell me about that. How does, because that one, I mean, I kind of track the other ones then, and this one seems to actually stand out for me a bit.
Well, the law of karma states that we are in a cycle whereby the sins and peccadilloes of previous lives have to be worked through. I get the impression that the karmic elastic band is snapping back much quicker.
I see. And that, okay.
The bank of karma, you used to knock on your door and say, hey, pay up for what you did last time. And you used to be able to say, oh, well, look, give me another couple of lifetimes to work this through. And the bank of karma is now saying, no, want it now.
Okay.
And I just observe in the world that the karmic elastic band is snapping back more quickly and more vigorously than it ever did, so that there is not only retribution for ill deeds, but there are also rewards.
Yes.
I just find that there is a far more satisfactory order in the world than there used to be, due largely to the power of karma now. It's not so easy to duck and dive and find your way out of responsibility for your actions.
No. I mean, actually, Barbara, you wanted to jump in?
I have a really cute little rhyme. I guess it's a Robert Frost rhyme that someone wrote us in the chat room. You'll appreciate this. It starts, "We dance around the circle and suppose, but the secret sits in the middle and knows."
Oh. That's a good
very
one.
Profound. Very good.
Isn't that a good one?
Wow. Read that again, Barbara. I like that.
"We dance around the circle and suppose, but the secret sits in the middle and knows."
Good. Yes.
See,
yes.
We have proof there that Robert Frost was, in fact, an author.
And a great
of crop circles, I don't know about that, but oh gosh, it gives us so much to think about. So I don't want to keep you gentlemen up all night, but it may be too late for saying that. But so if someone wants to learn more about, the title of the book, Crop Circles: The Bones of God, Michael Glickman. The site that the both of you oversee and manage is cropcirclereporter.com. Gary, if someone wanted to take a tour with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, I'm kind of in the process of organizing how I'm going to run my tours this year. It looks like I'm going to rent a minibus on one day a week. And have people fill the bus and book to come on the buses, either individuals or small groups to fill up the bus. And I'll announce that on the website. I've got small groups that have come with me for previous years that have already booked ahead of time. I'll be taking around, but I'll be spending a great deal more time on the reporter side this year. So the tour side of things is actually going to take, I'm going to do less of them this year.
Well, if you would want to announce the opening of the tour on our show, we'd love to have you.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
So if you wanted to come back and just give me a couple of weeks' notice when you're
ready to
talk about it.
All right, great.
And who knows, tomorrow morning you gentlemen may wake up and see that there's something else to see. Are we in the middle of the season, or is this just the beginning?
We're at the beginning of the season, yes.
Yeah.
We've had two absolutely extraordinary formations now, but the rate is going to increase astonishingly until the end of July, beginning of August, when it will peak. It's going to be an astonishing season. And, you know, I would advise all your listeners to get rid of shares, stocks and bonds tomorrow morning, sell their houses and motor cars, and come to Wiltshire.
That would make
a happening here.
Yeah, it'd be a fabulous transformation. I think I'd like to take you up on that advice.
But
if only my car was worth selling, that's the problem. I think the market for very old Volkswagen Beetles is probably not all that great right now. So, I wish I could wake up tomorrow and walk the fields with you to see what's next.
This is one of the joys we have of waking up each day and not knowing what miracle we could walk into.
Oh, boy. Well, Michael, by the way, before we say goodbye to you guys, are you working on another book?
Not that I know of.
Well, I think that your site, actually, anyone who hasn't been to it yet, it's looking to be a very robust place with a lot of information and a great place to gather and to learn what's happening. And if you can't get there yet or you want to have a preview of what you're going to see, I highly advise that you go and check it out. Gentlemen, I guess I should probably let you go. And
well, thank you very much.
It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure.
This has been an amazing journey.
And I still feel that there are things left to talk about in the book, but I think that we gave people a little bit of an idea about it. And,
well, they can check us out on the website, and it's, as you say, the video blogs, they really give people a feel for what it's like for us here.
Well, Gary, Michael, thank you so much. At least, Michael, you have a short, you can just turn out the light and you're in bed, so that'll be good. But...
I can and I will.
I think you should. And Gary, you actually probably should try to get a little bit of sleep.
Oh, I will. Thank you very much.
And thank you both for staying up so late or early. And it was just wonderful talking to you. And I hope Mark and I can definitely come over and visit.
Oh, it'd be a pleasure to have you.
Well, I'd love to do a live show from here.
It is terribly easy. It's easy. I mean, I hear people all the time. I get emails saying, oh, I would like to try to come over. It's really easy. You get on one of those aeroplanes.
There's no volcanic cloud or anything in the way, is there?
Oh, no, that was all a myth. That was never
seen. I mean, a paranoid, overinflated thing. Yeah. I mean, this is another part of the fear-based cycle we're passing.
People got that worked up over some ash.
What if
an alien life force showed up, even if they came over smiling with boxes of chocolates? You know what I mean?
Well,
I don't know what kind of a reception. You know, I know I'm from another dimension. I've got chocolates and roses, and I'd like to talk about the future of your planet. Do you have a little time? I'd like to ask for the hand of your daughter. Wait, no, that's something else.
No.
I think they're very wise to kind of leak out the fact that we're here, we're watching.
Very much so.
All right, gentlemen, you have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Barbara, those guys have got my head spinning.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. I definitely, we have to find a way to get over there.
Well, between the two of us, I think we'll be able to. I mean, I really do. You know, one of the things that, in Michael's book, he basically makes the summation that we are not alone. Well, that happens to be what I put on my business card. And it was funny to me that the idea that Barbara actually, we've been talking about, why do we do this? Why are we doing our psychic work? Why do we want to do this? Well, we're trying to communicate the idea that we're not alone. And then I find Michael here basically saying we're not alone in a somewhat different way. So I'm glad that we could have him and Gary with us. And I'd like to get him back, and maybe, Barbara, we can get an update later in the summer from them.
Yeah, I want to hear all about the new circles and the new formations, because I guess some people feel that, you know, it's a one-time deal, but it's not. They come up every season. Mm-hmm. Right now, this is the season, and there's all kinds of new circles, new designs. So it's not just a one-time thing.
No. While we have time, too, I wanted to let people know that if you'd like a short reading, I'm available to do that. The number is 818-574-8412, 818-574-8412. There really are a lot of correlations, Barbara, between the psychic work that I do, and I think the things that seem to happen in and around these fields. There's the idea that we are not alone. I get that confirmation all the time in so many different ways. And the fact that we're getting these fields by people we can't see and recognize tells me that. Also, too, when I do readings, the people that show up in spirit, it's fascinating to me. I just did a reading where, even before I was waiting for the client to arrive, and I had in my head this vision of a dark-haired man with very prominent eyes, kind of very direct, and his presence was very friendly, but coming right at you. It's like, hello, hi, I'm here. And so I thought, okay, this has to be a guy that is probably for these clients. And so when I meet them, I notice right away, okay, they all have prominent eyes. Okay, well, that's probably a relative, because I really didn't know who was going to be there, what they were. I mean, I don't know until I sit with them. But I also get my guides will tell me about people. My sitter's guides or my client's guides or loved ones will also tell me and make their presence known. And it makes for a pretty fascinating evening. What I was saying, too, I'm working on a book right now, and actually I was just writing about my guides. And I think it applies to anybody who is interested in meeting their guides. First off, don't be surprised if you keep hearing a name that's very familiar to you. Say, for example, one of my guides, his name is Stephen. And I have a brother, Stephen. And so it's almost as if this guide selected a name that I would be very comfortable with. And and we do have a caller. Hello, this is Mark. How can I help you?
Hold on just a second. I got to turn the chat room off. There we go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who's this?
Rob.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
What can I help you with, Rob?
Can you can you tell me is there some reason as to why I don't know why it is that now that I'm starting to hear things more? I'm just, you know, as far as like I feel as though I'm turning into like a medium.
Well, Rob, it may be that you're someone that is very, let me see, how can I put this? You're open to it now, maybe more so than at any other time in your life. It took me a while where I was presented with certain things I saw as a child, and then I walked away from it. And it wasn't until I was in a position in my mind, in my state in my life, that I could accept it and be open to it. And so clearly you are in that state of transition. I would also tell you that you're getting a lot of help. Let's see. You know, I'm seeing, it feels like that it would be a grandfather figure for you. I feel like that there's a taller, who I'm seeing, like, standing behind you, encouraging you. He looks like a fairly a large guy. I want to say, you know, 6'2", 6'3", something like that. He's a large presence.
That would be my grandpa, yeah.
Yeah, and he looked like when he was young, he was like a big, big, strong, you know, individual. And I feel mm-hmm. like, and I see he's behind you to do this work. I think too that if you allow yourself to think about, I would ask you to try a visualization exercise where maybe at your kitchen table or a place, maybe you could visualize yourself going to visit your grandfather's home. And I would recommend that you do this exercise. You meditate a little bit, take a little time, and visualize yourself walking to his door or having him walk to yours, to knock on the door, and then to have a conversation. And it may feel at first, oh, I'm just making this up. This feels forced. You know, I'm saying hello, he's saying hello, how are you? Well, let's be fair about this. Let's say you haven't spoken to your grandfather in a long time, and you're speaking to him in a way that maybe you're uncomfortable or you're not used to it. I would say that that's okay, and I would, you know, don't be afraid of a little absence or a little quiet and letting him fill in. There may be some time where you both just look at each other.
Okay.
All right, so...
Cool.
I would say go for it and embrace it. Another thing, too, if you start to get visuals of people, if you could write down what they are, get yourself a little notebook or a log or something like that. Little isn't the right term, but don't make a big deal out of it, but it's something that you would feel comfortable referring to. And write down what you see, hear, and feel, and then check to see as you get confirmations of those things.
Okay.
All
right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rob, for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
Bye. Well, I'm glad Rob called, and if anyone else wants to talk, we have a little bit more time. If you have a comment that you'd like to call in about, questions. I mean, Barb and I are learning a few things about these the crop circles.
Well, and I was going to say that's nice of Rob that he's discovering his ability, because we actually run into a lot of people that they are like on the cusp of discovering their ability, and they don't know what to do with it, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to develop it, and you know, it's like a mystery, and they're afraid of it, but they want to develop it further. It's kind of crazy. But I was going to say, Mark is actually writing a book about psychic development, so I think that'll help some of the people that are wondering what to do when they discover they have that ability.
I also want to mention to Rob that I think it takes a certain amount of courage to step up and say that, you know, I think I'm getting these things. I mean, for a long time, I was wondering, am I going crazy? I mean, is there something wrong with me? Are these just coincidences? Am I making a lot out of nothing? Oh, everyone has these thoughts where they seem to see little things or have very strong visuals that pop up at times. Well, don't try to rationalize it away. I really think it's important to not do that. I think it's much better to recognize that, you know, maybe, you know, the way I'm thinking is changing. I mean, you know, if I told you, you know, you could become better at a sport that you like, or that you could actually learn to build something better. You know, as a guy, I mean, I have a workshop. I've worked with my hands. I've done work like that. And I know I've been able to improve my skills in a very kind of a down-to-earth sort of way. Well, that also applies to the work that you do in how you control your thoughts, how you leave yourself open in a constructive way to spirit, to work with spirit. So everyone can develop their ability to some extent, and it can be very helpful in affecting, improving, and changing their lives. Yeah. Don't you think, Barb? I mean, Barbara has opened up a lot. I'm very proud of Barb because she's finally talking about it in a public way. And I think that she's really waking up to the possibilities of what she can do. And Barbara she, you know, once in a while hits a home run. And I think that what happens is these home runs start to happen more often. They don't seem to be the exception so much, but you have to trust them. So, Rob, you may shock yourself when it's like, how in the world did I know that? Why did I see a vision of my grandfather, and then all of a sudden I find a photo of him? It's not a coincidence. I really don't believe in coincidences. They don't happen.
Yeah, I almost think that, you know, I've always believed that everyone has a sixth sense, mm-hmm. and I think it was a part of what man needed before he had language so they could survive. So maybe there was a bit of telepathy in early man where they would, that's how they would survive. You know, if they felt there was a danger near, they could sense it. And I think animals have it too. I think animals have that instinct, you know, to look out for bad things or to warn you of bad things. And but I think we lost it when we hit technology, which I guess began with the wheel and fire, you know. But
the first aspects of it,
yeah, tools. And then I think it kind of went to the, you know, the back, and we forgot about it, but I think it's definitely there, and maybe this is a time of a reawakening for everyone.
A friend of mine named Justine told me about a situation where she had a feeling about something that was that she and her friends should not go to a place. And it was late at night, they were out, and she's very glad she did listen to that sense, because I guess there was some police activity in this area. If I'm not telling the story exactly right, Justine, forgive me, but it was a good, interesting story about how she really listened to her gut. And then it manifested in a very real way. There was something bad happening here, there was a bad guy in the area, there was a problem, and she was out with a couple of women that may have been vulnerable to attack by this kind of a crazy, dangerous individual that was out and about. So I would recommend that you all pay attention. If you have a feeling, write it down. You know, I started to keep a little notepad in my pocket of random thoughts. And I tell you, when you start paying attention to these thoughts and these feelings, you cannot help but wake up. It's like, you know, we all go through phases where, oh, I got to go to work. Oh, I got to go take care of this. I got to go take care of that. Well, you're missing a lot of subtext. You're missing a lot of other things that are happening around you. And that if you allow yourself to pay attention to them in a psychic way, or even in any, however you want to describe it, if you start paying attention to some of these details, you start to see the world very differently, and the world starts to change as a result around you. And it's a fascinating experience. I'm going through a lot of that lately. And so, Barb.
I was going to say that, you know, we're talking on the chat room that, you know, I think that when technology came in the forefront, that's when the instinctual or psychic sense kind of took a back seat. And, but I think it's time we need it again. You know, I think we need it more and more because of our changing world. And we're actually becoming, because of the globalization of the world, we're actually becoming a smaller community. I mean, we know everything that's going on. Look at tonight, we're talking to some guys in England. Yeah. And so we're like the global consciousness, we're coming together more and more, and we're more aware of things. And, you know, we have to make sense of all that.
That's very well said, honey. I wanted to let everybody know that next week we've got another terrific guest. Actually, we've got someone in our very own time zone. Can you imagine that? Her name is Terry Daniel, and she's the author of A Swan in Heaven, Conversations Between Two Worlds. And it's a book. She's a very interesting lady. She's a psychic, and she talks about afterlife communications, and she talks about, actually, Barbara, you're talking about telepathy, communicating with her son, who died tragically at a very young age. And we're going to talk a little bit about an organization that we're forming and putting together. And it's about afterlife communication with loved ones. And it's I think it has the potential to be really important. And Terry, from what I've had a chance to speak with her, and she's a interesting lady. I think you'll find her really interesting. And we're going to talk about how things work on the other side.
Also, too, I want to mention the Booth Brothers are going to be on George Norrie tonight at 10 o'clock. So I don't know what it is back east, but George Norrie is on KFI 640 out here in California, Southern California,
coast to coast. Right?
Coast to coast. So I believe you can listen to him online. But anyway, they're going to talk about their latest documentary on the incident with the real exorcism from about the movie of The Exorcist. But they're going to talk about their other films, but they're going to talk about their latest film. So anyway, if you guys can tune in, that's at 10 o'clock Eastern, right? Oh, no, wait, it's 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock our time, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 o'clock our time, so that'll be about 1 back east. 10 plus 3 is 1.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because George Norrie's on here at 10 o'clock, so.
Well, I guess we better wrap it up. I wanted to say thank you to one and all. I noticed that Don, our friend Don Shies, in the chat room. Hey, Don. Thanks for, again, we had a wonderful time on QueenCon. I hope you do it again. I bring it up because that's where we ran into the Booth brothers at that time, and it was they're fascinating guys. We actually saw a bit of a preview of what I guess they're going to be talking about tonight. Trust me, it's very interesting. Those guys have gotten into some of what makes it scary, or it's more than scary. It's fascinating, and it's real. And so when you put all that together, it gives you a lot to chew on. So in any case, next week we'll have a fascinating lady, author Terry Daniel, and I look forward to seeing you all then, so to speak. So until then, have a positively psychic week. Barbara, thank you again for doing this with us, co-hosting. And to one and all, have a positively psychic week. If you want a reading, you can reach me at mark@positivelypsychic.com. I'm available for that and for investigations. And shout out to Joan Rebecca, 3 a.m. Paranormal, and our other new friends. Take care. Good night, all.
Good night, everyone. This has been a Para-X production, sponsored by CBS Radio. We'll see you next week on Positively Psychic. You've been listening to Positively Psychic on Para-X Radio, the Internet's leading paranormal radio network, with listeners from around the world. Each week, we bring you cutting-edge paranormal radio, with fascinating interviews and call-in readings from your host, Mark Christopher Nelson. So tune in each week, Thursday evening, 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, on Para-X Radio. We'll see you next time on Positively Psychic.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.